he bet for him, you know, for this particular thing, which was a good deal for him. He doesn't have to pay $20 now. He's coming to play us. He's going to get $2, plus he's going to get 2 meals. And that particular night, we beat him 60-0. And he said, well, I thought you had a good team, but I did not know that you would beat me that bad. I said, well, to be honest with you, I could have made more, but I didn't. And I really could have, because one touchdown was made by a kid who was on the football team, and he didn't weigh about 110 pounds, but he had stayed out there the whole time, so he was a senior. So I said, well, let me give him a chance to see what he can do. He made a touchdown that night, because I put the first string line in the game and put him in the backfield and the first string quarterback and told him not to run nobody but him and let him score, and he scored. And that was the highlight of his career. So, yes, we did those things, and we fed teams after games. We gave them meals and those particular things. It built up some camaraderie with people when you did those particular things.
Did your team have the meal with the other team?
Yes.
That's a very sportsman-like kind of thing to do.
Well, it was back then, and because, well, you look for those things. Some teams would give it to you, some teams wouldn't give it to you. They say, well, you know, you come and play, I can't feed you. And you do this and then the other, we can do this, we can do the other. But that was one thing that we did. And we had people worked in the cafeteria there, prepared the meals. We paid them and did those things. We were very successful and made some money too.
I'm interested in your comment about Mr. Edgerson.
Yeah.
And that you should scout the band.
Right.
Now, I've interviewed a lot of people, and it just seems to me that performance and competition are two themes that run throughout this school. And I wonder if you would address that. I mean, that's what Mr. Edgerson is saying to you. We're going to outperform the other band. You need to scout them for us. You went down and you scouted. I mean, and the tradition of winning is obvious from the record there. Can you address those two items, competition and performance at the school?
Okay, well, back then they had band competition too. You know, you went to this particular meet and you went to this particular meet and you did this and that and the other. And Edgerton was a good, he followed the legend himself. He followed Mr. Bell, and Mug Bell as they call it. And Mug had good bands, and both of them had graduated from North Carolina Central University. And Edgerton came to Chapel Hill after Bell left. So it was laid out for him just like it was laid out for me. But in going and scouting the bands, he wanted to know what kind of formations they made and what they would do this and how they sound and what have you. Because he put in a lot of time in working with bands and the formations they were making, homecomings and marching and those things too. And it was strange because a lot of the kids on the football team played in the band too. So it would get around some time to where if he needed them to do something, see, I would let them do it. And if I needed them to do something, he would let them do it. So we never bumped heads about he coming with me today, he coming and doing this and what have you. We kind of shared these particular persons. And this was the thing that made it great because we got along real well. And he said, well, how did the band look? And I would give him my opinion of it, which means then he would shop it up or he would do something new. And everybody would be happy with it. So it was great. And then, believe it or not, after I left and went to work in Greensboro and then came back to work at Hillside, believe it or not, Edgerton was at Hillside. So we hooked up again. Both of us were Hillside graduates, and we ended up working back at our alma mater. So that's the way it went. But the competition was there. They had competition in band, just like they had competition in athletics. And we just helped each other as much as we possibly could.
So let me interpret what you said, if I may. I'm a football player and I'm in the band.
Right.
And it's homecoming. Right. So I march in the band.
You may. You may march in a parade for homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But that night you're gonna play football. Okay. And you're not gonna be with the band.
So you play football and then at halftime the band comes out.
Right. At the end, he'd be minus.
So you wouldn't be there.
He wouldn't be in the band then, he'd be with me.
So the parade wasn't directly before the game, it was in the afternoon.
It was in the afternoon. Most homecoming parades. Most Christmas parades and all those things were in the afternoon. It didn't bother with the night and those things. Strange.
Well, it's wonderful. I mean, you could do so much as
right.
a student.
Well, we shared people all kinds of ways. You had to. The student population wasn't that large. We were considered as being, there were three classifications. Actually, yeah, three classifications. During that particular time, 3A, 2A, 1A, and we were 2A team.
Because 1A was the smallest?
1A was the smallest. Most 1A teams did not play football.
Now, you were a 2A school, but didn't you play 3A teams as well?
We played one. Played Hillside.
How'd you do against Hillside?
Well, the first time we played Hillside, we tied Hillside in Durham Athletic Park. Second time we played Hillside, we played over here, we beat them. And that was the start of my crown because of the size of it. In the third year we were to play Hillside, superintendent wouldn't let us play because we played the year before, we played the game before school opened. And there was a ruling against you cannot play unless school is open. And we had scheduled a game before school was open and we couldn't play it. He would not let us play. The politics got into some kind of way and he wouldn't let us play. They probably would have beat us that year too. Yeah, real good team that year.
I want to go back to the assistants that you had, unpaid assistant coaches.
Right.
And wanted to find out who were they. Did they come from Lincoln, or were they other people in the community?
No, basically they had been athletes at Lincoln. One's name was Milt Bynum. Somebody else probably hear that name again, Milt Bynum.
Mm-hmm.
B-Y-N-U-M, he's dead now. He's diabetic. And another one was Albert Hogan. Albert Hogan. Albert later worked as transportation officer in the school, so he just retired maybe a couple of years ago. Milt was around with these kids all of the time, and he knew all of them and whatever. So that was how he moved around, and he came to help. He would do things that I would ask him to do, you know, as far as helping kids and sometimes getting messages to them about certain things and whatever. He was good at doing that. Albert, when I first came to work over here, where was Albert? Albert was probably in the service, and then he did some work with one of his friends because they ran a service station. But Albert had played at Lincoln, and then he had graduated from West Virginia State University, and he had played some. So he asked me, did I mind if he came down and helped some? And my reply was no. He did come down and help. But most of the coaching fell direct on my shoulders.
Did you have any help from the UNC coaching staff or any of the UNC players?
No.
Did you ever play Chapel Hill High School, either scrimmage them or play them?
No. That was one thing that you wasn't going to. And Bob Colvin and I used to talk about that all the time. I think Bob was the one who talked so much about when they were going to build one high school, and then when we integrated the school, what it would be like. But see, I left before that happened. Pillman was here when that happened.
I understand in the late 40s and the early 50s, there were scrimmages between Chapel Hill High and either Orange County Training, well, it wasn't Orange County, it was Lincoln then, in the 48, 49, in Lincoln. So I guess it would be between Lincoln they were unofficial, and they were there was a an All-American end at Caroline who had arranged for that. One of the football players had arranged for that. You didn't know anything
about it, and that's the first time I ever heard it. I never knew that.
Well, I think it's important to validate these things. That's why I bring it up, and so I wondered.
We never did that. It was one of those things that we knew that you weren't supposed to do, and I think Bob and I both would have lost our jobs if we'd have tried to do it. Mm-hmm. Bob called them. Hey, if we'd have tried to do it, we would possibly have lost, because the school then was, Chapel High School was right there on Franklin Street, right across from where Michael Jordan's in there. That's where it used to be. Had an old big building and set back there. It was made out of tin. Was where they played their basketball game. Yeah.
Do you have remembrances of the school, the academic part of the school? You taught physical ed. Maybe you were off in the gym and not part of the school. But
I taught history, too.
Taught history also.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about history. Your teaching, because I think that was an issue with integration. The issue that I want to bring up is Black history and how this was integrated, if you will, into your curriculum.
I'm trying to think now that we set aside, we set aside some particular days that we used as Black history, but most of the history that we taught was basically, we taught something about North Carolina, something about the United States history. Of course, some Blacks would come in, and I don't think anything was specifically taught the way it was just Negro history. You might teach it as a portion of things. And history back then was, in how I got a minor in history, I never know until my grades went over to the State Department, and they tell me, so, well, physical education major, you got a minor in history, a minor in social studies, and what have you, so that was fine. But it wasn't one of those things to where it's done like it's done now. You know, the way you set aside a whole month to do it, well, there was about a week that you would do it then, and now it's gotten to the point where it's over. I was, about 3 years ago, some of us would play baseball there in town, and Negro baseball, as they call it. We had a team that was very good, and oftentimes before integration, we played against some white boys, but it was for a point of making money, and it was for a point of just good sportsmanship and what have it. And 3 years ago, some of us who played Black baseball made a little clip for Fox 50, and some of the kids who were around town said, "You see, I didn't know you never played baseball." So a whole lot of things I don't ever say anything about that I did do, and then we can talk from there. But other than that, it's just one of those things. Now it's a whole month, so you know much more about it because some things come up. You would put up some pictures and things about things that were first and fourth Blacks were concerned. Him was a good baseball player too. An excellent baseball player.
Now, your books that you used were from the white schools.
Some of them were handed down. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while you get some new books. Mm-hmm. Most of them came from book warehouses, so you know you could tell when they'd been used before.
But I would assume that they were for white students that didn't have any Black history in them.
Not too much.
So you had to dig that up yourself.
That's right.
That easy to do?
It is, especially when you are exposed to college libraries and you go through under Black professors and things to tell you. And believe it or not, some of the presses that we had now gone since when I went through, it was John O. Franklin. See, and then Helen Edmonds, and she was a historian too. And Leroy Walker, and Johnny Mack Lindman. These were Johnny Mack and Leroy were in physical education. I'm a really hammer taught biology, who was a football coach. I played baseball for a fellow who used to umpire down in the Caribbean, the South American pops tournament. He had some good instructors at that particular time, and they really interested prepared us for what we were going out to face. Because at that particular time when you went to school as a Black kid, we were only certain things that you really truthfully look to do. Why would you either with the law you preach, or you were a teacher? They had a few doctors, and that was it. So you prepared yourself to go in any of those fields.
Law?
Yeah, law.
North Carolina Central had a law school.
Right.
Okay.
It's like, you got one.
Oh.
Yeah, had a law school.
I want to go back to the fans at the games. Someone was saying that Lincoln drew from all over.
He did. He drew from in town, out in the county, from Durham, and any place else that was close by when they wanted to see good football play. So they did. They drew from all over. I know that Pittsburgh's in the next county. And it was Horton High School. Most of those particular kids at Horton came to Chapel Hill and worked on the summer. And the kids in Chapel Hill worked, so a lot of them knew each other. So one year the coach at Horton and I, we'd been friends, and we were supposed to go over to Horton and play. And it was going to be one of those games that we played at 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the daytime. School would get out, and they were going to give us about the same thing that we were going to get from going down to Monroe Avenue. And we talked it up to the point, said, okay, I'll tell you what, let's do. Let's play Horton and Lincoln on a Saturday night in Carver Park, and let's publicize it. What we'll do after expenses is split the money between the two schools. See, won't be no nothing else. They won't feed you and those things at this time, so we'll just split the money once we go. And he made enough money that particular year to last him the whole football season, because he wasn't making that much off of kids in school, because they knew about the people from Pittsburgh and all down in Bynum and everywhere else, Chapel Hill, Orange County, and every place else that he gave them that. People were standing almost on the sidelines, out the stands and everywhere else because of the large crowd. But you had to learn to promote things and do things at that particular time to get the most out of it.
How many people would come out to see you play?
It varied on who you were playing, and you could always look for more if you were playing. Say, like, the night we played Horton, I imagine it was 1,000 or 2,000 people. And I guess the night we played Hillside out there, it was about the same. Homecoming, and maybe a little larger. It all depended on who you were playing and the number of persons wanted to come, but you would get the people. They had a bunch of older fellas around town who used to follow us everywhere we go. Played in the daytime, and look up and see some of them. They would follow you. And if anywhere you went, they would go.
I understand some of the white people came out to
the
games also.
Right. They did. They had good problems all over town.
Are there any other things that you recall from coaching that you want to share?
What, here in Chapel Hill?
Yeah.
I think that I made a difference in some of the kids' lives and some of my life, but it didn't make a difference. Most of those I touched. A lot of them went to college. Some of them went to college. See? And some of them didn't go. Some of them became productive citizens. Some of them didn't. And oftentimes, we came, when I bump into them, we would sit and talk about some of the good times we had, and talk about some of the bad times we had, and most of the good times, because we were, there were a few around town. Take Braxton Machine, who was one of the I don't know what you call him over in Carver. He was on the town board over there. And there have been some firemen, some of the recreation department, and a lot of them worked for the university. Some of them still work for the university. It's been good. There was one thing that I did find out, though. And I think it bothered me a little bit when I first started looking at it back during then. The university kind of engulfed all of the blacks that were in town. And when I say that, it looks like the only thing that they could do here was work for the university. And some of them never got out of that mold. And a lot of the parents went to the university. But some of the parents eventually began to see to the point of where that their kids need to not do the same things that they were doing. So the ones who could provide for their kids to go to college sent them to college. And some of these kids who played athletics were fortunate enough to get athletic scholarships. So they were able to break away and go. So with that particular part about it, some of those particular persons who were able to go to college, and they came back and sent their particular kids to college. So we find it's a little different now in Chapel Hill than it used to be. It used to be one of those things where you kind of locked in. Kind of locked in if you were black. Now you can get out of it.
And the kind of jobs that they had at the university?
Right. A lot of those were working in the hospital, working for fraternities, cooking in cafes and cleaning and those things. Right. Nothing wrong with it now, because they had to provide for their particular families. But you get locked in the same thing, and sometimes you never would. You never get out of it.
Those are low-paying jobs also.
Right. They were
hard to support a family.
That's right. See, I listen sometimes to my mother-in-law and this day and talk about my father-in-law. Sometimes he worked 2 or 3 jobs. But he gave his kids an opportunity to branch out and go. My mother-in-law did too. He worked hard. And some other families did the same thing. But sometimes they get locked in. They used to get locked in to the point that we're a dead end. It was just a dead end.
I wanted to ask you what you did to get your athletes to go on to college. Did you act as a counselor? Did you take them places? Did you do anything to?
We were fortunate enough to be exposed to where having good football teams, to where people would come to see us play, especially black schools and whatever. The black colleges, so therefore they would come and they'd hear about certain kids and they want to know about them. And that's when I would come into the point and try to counsel them, you know, on the way what they should do. I had many of them to go to ENT. I had a few to go to North Carolina Central. I had some to go, some went to Maryland Eastern Shores and some other places. And some were good enough to go and they just wouldn't go. So what can you say? Various stories are told about certain things. See, so you talk to them and you tell them, and people come to see them, and they may come and ask you, well, what should I do? And then you try to counsel them to the point to where they make their own decision. They can't come back and say, well, you counseled me wrong. And you make your own decisions about where you want to go.
So are you saying that the team was so good that the scouts from the universities came down here.
Black universities.
Black universities.
Yeah.
Came down here and tried to recruit. While you were coach, any white scouts, white university scouts come down?
Not at that particular time. Yeah, when I went to work at Hillside, which was later on after working at Dudley, which is later on, then we had them to come. But during that particular time, Bob, believe it or not, and I'll just give you an instance of what happened at Hillside. Whenever a white coach would come into a black school at that particular time, they were looking for a kid with a certain profile. And when I say a profile, they were looking for how he was built. In other words, small waist, big calves, you know, big thighs. And he couldn't be pigeon-toed, he couldn't be slew-footed. They wanted him to walk a certain way, and they wanted him to be a certain size. Yeah, that's right. Those things happen. Because we used to say, well, how in the hell can you come looking for a black kid on a profile that you have from a white kid when you know damn well that he's not going to fit into that mold? He's not going to fit that mold. And I think they finally began to realize that we better take kids on the basis of their ability, more so on the profile that we're going to get. And never we'll forget that Carolina State, Michigan State, and a couple others came in to recruit a kid. And then they had a profile, and they go away shaking their head. But, you know, we can't do this and that and the other. But now it's a different ball game. It's a different ball game altogether.
How so?
Well, it's to the point you take a kid on the basis of his ability. And I think Bob Hayes was one of the first to invest in that they were looking at the wrong person. Bob Hayes was slew for it. I mean, pigeon toe. And he could run.
He sure could.
Okay, so, you know, what you going to say? Hey, well, you know, we better start back up and take another look at this. So we recruit kids now.
I understand that you married one of the drum majorettes.
I did. Really did.
Can you share some of that story with me?
It's a long story. it's really a long story. It really is. And I did my majorette, my Chattanooga girl. And we leave it at that.
Okay. Now, did you leave school and go coach somewhere else at that point?
I did. Before we married, I worked at Dudley. I left Lincoln to go to Dudley. Mm-hmm. Dudley was the largest school. And it was probably one of the worst moves I ever made in my life. It was the largest school, and because Lincoln and Chapel Hill had been good to me. Dr. Johnson had been real good to me. And the athletes and those things. But I came down and I got talked into going to another school. And it's one of the worst moves that I ever made. It became bad because I did not have the type of athlete when I first got there that I thought I would have. So the first year was kind of a struggle. Then the next year, the athletic director and I had a big controversy because he came and got me and hired me to come to Dudley. And then he wanted to tell me how to coach, and I won't be for that. See, I'm going to do it my way. You hired me to do this, I'm going to do it my way. So I stayed there 2 years. Then I was fortunate enough to go to Hillside.
Did you become head coach at Hillside?
Yes, after being there about 7-8 years.
So you were an assistant at Hillside, and then you became head coach?
I went into doing what I really wanted to do when I first finished college. When I first finished college, I wanted to go work under someone, and be an assistant coach, and learn the ropes about things. But when the first job I had, I was a head coach. And I had to go back and take my notebooks that I had put together in class and things that we had done as a football player and those things and make these things work for me when I first became there. And this was the things that I did all the way through until, you know, you get a little smarter every year, a little smarter every year, a little smarter every year until you learn a little more about the game and then you go from there. But we had been prepared real well to do certain things before we left the physical education department at North Carolina Central University. Leroy was an excellent teacher, and so was Mike Linden. And Leroy not only was a good track man, he was one hell of a football coach. And this is what people don't know. So we had coaching and fishing and football under Leroy. And we had basketball under Mike Linden, so you had to keep your notebooks and those things. So the first year I coached, I used my notebooks to play. Then you begin to read, then you begin to go to clinics, and you pick up this, you pick this up, you pick this, and you add a little bit to it. So this is what happened. I mean, this is what you have to do.
So you were at Hillside when it was integrated.
That was at Hillside when it first integrated.
Now, that's not the usual scenario that you have a black school that is integrated and becomes black and white.
Right. But see, within the city of Durham, you only had two high schools. Okay. You only had two high schools. And in the county at that particular time, you had three high schools. See, you had Durham High School and you had Hillside High School. And Durham High was a predominantly white school. Hillside was down the black school. So when it came time to integrate the city system, They drew a line
down.
You live here, you go to Hillside. You live here, you go to Damascus. That lasted one day. Because another provision was put in. Now, if you're at Durham High School and you go in the Hillside, if they don't have a course at Hillside that you were taking at Durham High School, you can go back to Durham High School, and the vice versa, you know, Western. So one day we come on the field, Coach Blunt and I, head coach, he's the head coach and I'm the assistant, and we have salt, and we got pepper, we got blacks, we got whites, we got blacks, and we got whites. And we're looking and saying, boy, this is what, you know, what is this going to be like? We had some kids who've been starters at Durham High, some kids who've been second team. We had some starters here and whatever. The next thing, there was one white boy out there. The rest of them were gone. Went back to Durham High School. Yet still now, the student body was integrated. That was athletics. And we had good teachers. There were no such things as race fights. Teachers took care of that. They had me treated. I remember having a homeroom when the first integrated, and I had 20 girls in my homeroom, about equal numbers. And that's the first time that I ever had a homeroom for one whole year, for every girl stayed in school. Nobody dropped out, nobody got pregnant. None of those things. All of the girls stayed in school. They had some boys, it's a different story. But all of the girls stayed in school. And I think out of the 20, about 13 of them were honorable students. Okay. But that's what happened.
Did they have, I assume you know the story of what happened at Chapel Hill High School when it integrated into the new high school. The walls that grew up between the blacks and the whites, and the fact that it was supposed to be integrated, but it was really simply merged, and it was the white school that allowed the blacks to come in, and they kept the white tradition until some riots.
Right. We never had those things happen, because when they came, they accepted those things. But another factor involved with it, though, was we got a lot of the particular white kids who were well-to-do. Kids with money. Mm-hmm. And kids' parents who could help Hillside do some things that they normally couldn't do otherwise. Like, we had tennis matches in our court. We had four courts, or maybe two at that particular time. Then we could go someplace else and play, where we'd have four or five courts to play on because of the kids. And parents got involved in it. But we never had any of those things that really happened. No, it was an excellent part, an excellent faculty, the Hillside, black and white, and we stayed on top of things to make sure that those things didn't happen.
Now, could you give me a breakdown of the percentage of the percentage of teachers who were black and white and the percentage of students who were black and white?
I can't, not at this particular time, because when I think back over it, I really have forgotten the percentage of what it really was. See,
if you can't give me a percentage, can you remember whether there was significant black presence in the faculty? Did you have a few black teachers, or did you have a goodly number?
A goodly number, because none of us in Hillside lost our job. They didn't move too many of us. When you needed to replace someone, if someone left, then they brought in some whites. But all of us got along with them. And that was the point. And if you fix the timing, it looked like eventually maybe a few more blacks than was whites, but all of them were still there. So we supported each other.
You kept the same traditions that you had.
Kept the same traditions. Same colors, mm-hmm. Same mascot, mm-hmm. Same coaches and things. We had some white coaches to come in. And they went along with the program, so that was it. Durham High School did the same thing. until later on then white flight came in, and you know, the business in the school system became predominantly black because whites moved and some moved out of the city. So this is, that was, that happened too.
But you didn't have the riots there?
No riots.
No fights,
no name calling? No name calling. None of that. Teachers stayed on top of that. Had a good faculty, one that wouldn't put up with no stuff like that. Just wasn't going to happen.
One of the things that's mentioned repeatedly in the interviews is about Orange County Training School, Northside, Lincoln, is that the teachers lived in the community. The teachers knew the families, they knew the students. And I wonder if you can address that at Hillside. Was it similar there, or was it different?
It was similar. Most of the teachers at Hillside lived within the school district. I think when I worked at Lincoln, I was probably one of the few who didn't live in the community, but I was here enough, you know, about being in coaching phase, it was important. And I was just down the road in Durham. And they never told me I had to move over here, so I just stayed in Durham. So that was it. Now, all of the other places I worked, I had to live within, I lived within the community. But in Durham, there may have been one or two, maybe three, who didn't live in Durham.
When integration occurred at Hillside, did you have any preparation for it? Did you have any seminars or lectures or anyone come in and talk about what things would be like?
If they did, I can't remember. Because the athletics in the afternoon took up a lot of your time, and during the school day, you know, you were teaching classes, you were doing this. If so, I don't remember much about it. Now, in a whole lot of places, though, they had a whole lot of things, a whole lot of bad things that happened. And you'd pick the paper up and read. And sometimes we'd shake our heads and go to the map. We're not going to help them.
And you think the reason that it didn't happen there
was the faculty?
Was the faculty,
right? I mean, we got the one prominent person who was in the state senator, the Jim Lucas. She was a faculty. Ralph Hunt was on the faculty. And we just had the room to handle. I think the amazing thing about it was them getting a job at Marcus working at back in my Apple Martin.
How so?
Well, it had been hard. There were very few of us who graduated from Hillside who came back to work there. We worked there. Most of them were outside. And so it was gratifying, you know, to be able to go back to the Apple Martin.
Was that a policy that they had to hire outside?
I don't know whether, I don't know whether it was a policy or not, but it was followed.
Yeah.
And the year before I got the job, there was enough people who really, some of them remembered my being at Lincoln. And then my going to Dublin, they realized that I was just satisfied. And they knew that a vacancy was coming up the Hillside, so there were a lot of persons in town. And then we went to that for me. And along with the superintendent to the point I was going to get a job. Had been too many of us. And then I think that I am the second graduate of Hillside to become a coach of Hillside.
That's the second.
So then after that, since then, there have been some others. Oh, it's been good for me. I have to point to it. Lincoln has been one of those great launching pads and launching to the point to where a lot of the success that I've had.
How long did you stay at Hillside as head coach?
I worked at Hillside 15 years, and I was an assistant coach in Camp Dayton 7, 8 years in football, and I was an assistant in basketball 6 or 7 years, and I became a basketball coach. And then after becoming a head basketball coach, then I became a head football coach and athletic director. And and then I worked, I had that, worked those particular jobs for about 6 years, and then I went up to the administration buildings as the first black citywide, school district-wide athletic director in the state of Montana.
Is that where you are now?
Now?
Yes.
I'm basically retired. I worked for a bit further.
But you're still really busy. Every time I call you, you're out.
I'm busy. They ran into some problems with getting some PE teachers, and I have been filling in, the evidence work in the administrative office. And this particular year, they took me off a local pay and put me on state pay. And so they did and asked me if I would be able to teach a physical education at elementary school.
One of the things that you said earlier that I'd like to go back to is that the team went to church together.
Yep.
And I'd like to visit two areas here. One is the church when you were growing up, and secondly is the tie-in of church and school.
Okay, the church played a very important part when I was growing up as a kid. It was, of course, there was the home, and there was community, and there was the church, and there was school. And I basically was raised in church. In fact, now I find myself, I stayed away from the church one time. Reason being because coming up as a child, I was forced to go by my mom and all of the people around me. And I told my mom, I said, if I ever get to the point where I don't have to go to church, I'm not going to go. And I did. I reached that particular stage to where on Sunday morning I'd get my golf sticks and go to the golf course and do those things and just wouldn't go to church. Leave home early or what have you, just wouldn't go. And then something kept on edge, so I went back. Now, when it came to those particular things, I also figured that the only way that you could build good unity, a lot of good personal feelings about people, where you had to do some things together, right? One thing about them, okay, we played together. Went to the same school. We showered together. We talked about various things. There are some other things that need to come in. We traveled together. And I oftentimes made them dress up to go wherever we were going. Made them, if you're going to be a champion, then you got to look like one. So therefore, you don't go off with no overalls and some things on. You put on a necktie and a shirt and look like somebody. So therefore, also said, okay, I believe in a higher power. Most of you believe in a higher power. So therefore, let's put some God in this particular team too. So he said, okay, once a year, just once a year, maybe once a year, all of us going to get together and we're going to church together. And we'd always go to Reverend Manners Church. He would know when we were coming. And this one I won't be. You got dudes don't go to church. And if somebody can get them to go to church, then that makes a difference. Now, I've done that every place that I work. Every place that I work. At least we're going to church at least one time during the year. So there was no, I've had a principal to tell me it wouldn't work. You can't do it, you can't force them. Not a matter of fact of forcing them. As a matter of fact of saying, hey, look in, we as a team, we need to do some things together. And I would like very much for us, to go to church together. Now, I've had some white kids that tell me, well, Coach, my religion won't let me go with you to your church. Good, you told me. Now, what you do, though, is you go to your church and you pray just like we're going to pray in the church we're going to for us to have success. and that's it. Now, I'm not forcing anybody to do anything. And I knew that if I had been forcing someone, jumping up and down and saying this and the other, they used to tell the kids another thing. This is when they had a system, especially at Dudley, and then when I got to Hillside, they knew they had a system. Now, the thing about it is this. If you're not going to church, don't tell the assistant coach. Don't tell none of the ball players. You come and tell me. And you and I will iron it out. You responsible to me, not them. I heard some coaches say, well, he ain't going. Okay, I know he ain't going. He told me why. You have a conversation. That's all he said. So we never bumped heads about that, about school and those things. And then a lot of the people used to look for us to come. Well, man, look at me. Speak highly about it. And they do the same thing, basketball season.
So all your teams, yeah, at some point, go to church.
In fact, in Durham, got to the point where I had a couple of white assistants and said, okay, well, coach, come on, go meet them at my church. Fine. And we were accepted there. And then they said, well, today we had a Hillside High School football team. We didn't stand up. Nothing wrong with that. And we were coming.
Are there any other memories that you have that you want to share that I haven't asked you about, things that you think might be important to bring up?
Yeah, a couple of things.